Our next guest is oh my goodness, it's one of our favorites. She's got a I gotta go down there this summer. He's got a great restaurant, Flanders Fish House, down in Flanders, Connecticut. Is Flanders actually a I think we talked about this the last time he was on.
It's
like a little
so.
Portion of a town,
like a borough, basically.
Right off the highway too. I'm going there this summer for
oh,
sure.
Oh yeah.
He's also a state senator, Paul Formica. Excuse me. looks like I haven't even met the guy. Paul Formica. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? Good morning, everybody.
How are you? Long time no speak.
Flanders is a borough of East Lyme.
A borough.
Villages. Nyannick and Flanders are villages in East Lyme. And we're doing well, thank you. How about you?
I can't complain. Well, I could complain. You know, nobody would listen, though. You know how that goes.
Yep.
There's a few things I want to talk to you about this morning, and I want to talk to you about some of the protests and the unrest. I know I've seen you pictures of you on Facebook at some of these protests, but before we get there, you're both a state senator and a restaurateur. Let's talk about the restaurants reopening. Number one, how has it been since you can now accept outdoor diners? Has that proven successful for you, or is it not cost effective at all?
No, it's been very successful for us in the terms of, you know, we reinvented our process back on March 17th when we had to close for indoor and open only for takeout and curbside.
Right,
and we've kind of continued that, and it's done very well. We're treating the outside dining as a takeout in our case, so we're not sending waiters out to the tables, and you know, you come in, you get your takeout, and you find a table, and we have tables sprinkled around the property and on the deck. So, you know, it seems to be working out very well. In the beginning, people were a little timid about coming, and it's taken a week or so for people to get more comfortable, for to actually feel like they're sitting there in a safe environment. I think that feeling is growing a little bit, and we seem to be doing better. So I think we'll see the same type of apprehension, you know, next week when we're able to do some modified indoor dining.
Yeah, let's talk about that then. It's about 50% capacity, and since you had, you know, a fairly decent response, it sounds like, and I'm happy to hear that, because it's not necessarily the same answer that I get from other restaurateurs who I've either had on the show or just ask when I'm out and about. A lot of times they say, you know, not many people are coming because either it's too hot or they're afraid they may get caught in the rain, or they're just not ready to come out here yet, or they don't want to be, you know, all these restrictions or whatnot. And it may not even be advantageous for, you know, the restaurant operator itself. And I'm glad it's worked out for you. How do you think that will translate when you're able to open up your doors to have 50% capacity in a couple of weeks?
Well, I think it should be okay. I think people are anxious to get back to some type of normal.
I don't know that
we know what the new normal is yet, but I think people are anxious to kind of get out and get their life back from this. I think people are feeling that the virus is waning, giving the numbers of hospitalizations down, and I think there's a higher level of comfort, although, you know, certain populations still have to be very concerned. So, I think it will be okay. I think it will take some time for people to get comfortable. You know, we can open at 6 feet intervals with tables, and that's going to be a hardship for a lot of small places that are, you know how restaurants are. They're cozy and cramped.
That's right.
People like to feel, you know, that there are other people around and listen to the din of conversation, and that's all part of the restaurant experience, you know, on top of the food. So, you know, as an example, I have, you know, a dining room with a bar and a banquet room. I'm not going to be able to use the dining room. It's just too small and narrow. And, you know, so we're going to have to transition the other room for a short time where we can, you know, have some tables in there and create some, you know, comfortable space. So the new regulations allow for bars to open, which is interesting, although you can't have anybody behind the bar. Unless you have a plexiglass barrier. So, you know, that's
crazy.
Not going to happen too many, no standing at the bar, sitting at the bar 6 feet apart. So, I mean, that really means you're not going to get any bar business. And all of the same, you know, requirements in terms of masks and gloves and, you know, cleanliness and sanitizing everything, that all stays in place. And I think everybody's used to that, both, you know, in their homes and their cars whenever they go out or when they come to a retail place or a restaurant. So I think people are adjusting, but, you know, it's going to take some time for people to do it. But we need to get the economy going. We need to get moving. There are businesses that are opening, large department stores, Lowe's, Target, et cetera, that, you know, you walk down some of those aisles, it's very crowded. And, you know, there are no social distancing. So, you know, you can make the argument that if it's working there, then it can work in restaurants and small retail.
Well, exactly. Seems to be the overall sentiment from, you know, the citizens of our state who've noticed that very quickly. You know, you said you have a banquet room. I can't imagine any banquets going on this year. So, I mean, that's a room that you can use for your restaurant. You know, that's to your advantage. Yeah. But going back to the bars, I don't understand. I mean, do you understand the rationale behind the plexiglass that separates the bartender from the patron?
You know, I don't. If you compare it with, you know, if it's okay to have a table 6 feet apart from another table, you know, you're going to need a waiter to come up to that table,
right?
And the waiter's not going to be 6 feet away. You're going to need, you know, the drinks and the food delivered to that table, and that obviously is not going to be 6 feet away. So most bars, you know, if you're sitting at a bar and you're sitting, you know, maybe you're leaning your elbow on the bar and you're looking at the bartender, and, you know, that there's probably 3 feet between the two of you, which is about the same distance that you're probably going to get when a waiter comes to a table. So I'm not sure what the thinking is there, but, you know, that's the rule that Connecticut Restaurant Association, you know, Scott Dolch, who's the executive director, has been, you know, working really hard with the ECD, trying to educate, you know, the agency about, you know, how restaurants operate. And, you know, this could have been a lot worse. So, you know, let's start where we are and see where we go. And hopefully, you know, in a few weeks, we'll be able to, you know, expand it as, one, people become more comfortable, and two, it becomes obvious it's going to be safe.
I think the last time that we had you on, I was telling you how I applauded you, your appearance with our governor. I think it was through a Skype type of thing where, or Zoom, right? Okay, you know, for one of his daily press conferences at the time, has he consulted with you at all? Just being both a state senator and being a restaurateur, and asking for just for an opinion of yours, or since you've appeared on that press conference a few weeks ago?
Not since that day. Nope. I mean, he. And really, even before, he's kind of acted, you know, alone on a lot of these things, or with his inner circle and commissioners. And, you know, we had a discussion that day. I was very honored and pleased to be able to participate in that press conference. And I was glad he asked. But since then, we've not heard anything from the administration about what do you think? And I think that's fallen on the Restaurant Association to try to, you know, carry the water for people. And there are a lot of restaurants that aren't really going to be able to do much. You know, the small mom and pop shops that have 4 or 5 tables, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it's a tough thing.
That's got to be disappointing, not only as a state senator, where the legislature has been more or less locked out of some of these decision making, but also as a restaurateur yourself and not being consulted. If I want to know how to make a souffle, I'm going to talk to a chef. If I want to know how to perform any work on my car, I'm going to talk to a mechanic. If I want to know how to get restaurants reopened, I'm going to talk to a restaurateur. But it doesn't seem to be the formula that this governor is taking.
Well, no, not at all. And in fact, you look at the consultant that was just hired with, you know, some, you know, open eyes here. I'm trying to figure that whole thing out. You have, you know, 180 plus legislators that come from all walks of life that, are vested in trying to do the best thing they can for their constituents in terms of safety and economy and open the state of Connecticut and working with the administration. I mean, if you want to ask the experts, I mean, there are people from every field that works, as you know. You were part of it. So that's disappointing that he's not been there. He started out with the collaboration early with the leaders, and we were able to funnel a lot of information up. And some of his staff has been great. And quite frankly, I texted the governor last week and said, listen, we got to do something about these graduations. I mean, there's no reason why we can't have graduations. And then, you know, we had a short conversation after that. And then he came out with, the July 6th 150 ruling, which, I'm not sure whether that's 50 students and two parents each or 150 students. And, so he has reached out occasionally, but not about the restaurant stuff.
Well, he seems to then, it's more than what a lot of other state legislators in the House or Senate could say. It almost seems like he likes you and values your opinion to some extent, you know.
Well, I mean, that's great. I like him. I think he's a nice guy, and I think he's working hard. And, you know, there's a lot not to criticize what he's doing. But, you know, the problem with the pandemics and these types of emergencies is, you know, you want to evaluate after the fact. You know, what could have been done better? How could government been more prepared? How can we have all reacted better? And I think that's what we need to really focus on. Right now, we have to, as you say, if someone has a knowledge or expertise on what happens on Main Street, whether it's a restaurant, a retail, or a gas station, I mean, you should reach out to them and say, hey, what do we do? And
exactly.
I called early on for industry associations to, provide processes, especially when the hair salon barber debacle happened. You know, they're going to open and then they can't open. Who better than industry experts to help, guide?
Exactly. That's my point. Did you know the governor prior to him getting elected? Did you know him at all?
I think we met, a few times during his previous runs. You know, we kind of encountered each other, but I didn't know him. So we just were able to speak to each other and listen. You know, part of what I need to do, and my background as a restaurateur is, you know, you have to talk to people. And I go up there and I try to talk to both sides of the aisle to try to understand everybody's viewpoint and point of view on every issue. And that's the best way to reach consensus, is when you understand what everybody else is thinking. And so, you know, I've made a habit of reaching across the aisle and talking to other people. And, you know, I think that's been part of the reason I've been, somewhat successful.
Yeah, yeah. That's an asset, to you. And I only wish more people were like that. And we're running out of time, so I wanted to go in another direction with this. I think I saw a post of yours on Facebook where you had attended a pretty peaceful rally. Tell us about that, and how come some are more peaceful than others? Others, you hear about, on national level, you hear about the looting and setting places ablaze. And then here in Connecticut, you see, blocking roads and major highways, but yet others can be very peaceful. What makes one go in one direction and another go in another direction?
I think, partially it's the communities in which they take place. Some of the cities seem to be more, of an angrier, place. Sometimes protesters, professional protesters come in from out of state and, rile up the crowd a little bit. We've seen that happen. Here in southeastern Connecticut that I've been involved in three of these Black Lives Matters conversations and rallies. And I think it's time for this awakening in this country. I think it's time for us to, to really listen and to try to understand, what's causing all of this angst. And certainly these rogue police officers, this is not acceptable, and they don't represent the nearly 99.9% of peace officers throughout this you know, this state and this country, you know, who wake up every day, you know, wanting to serve and protect and, you know, are probably as outraged about this as you and I are. So, you know, we need to have this conversation, and it's been too long, and we need to make sure that we understand what everybody's feeling. And I think part of the reason that there has not been problems in those rallies that I've been to is, you know, the speakers have been focused on those points and not riling up. And, you know, violence and you know, this looting and smashing of windows, you know, is not, it just takes away from the conversation.
It does.
We need a better conversation.
What do you, and finally, my final question for you, Senator, is what do you think is going to come out of all of this?
You know, I think if you go back to Dr. King and the message that, you know, he so eloquently stated, you know, 60 years ago, you know, we've come a long way, but we haven't come far enough. And, you know, today we have social media, and today we have a lot easier ways to connect with people. You know, that's good and bad sometimes. But in this case, I think it's good because the word is out, and I think people are outraged. And I think, you know, we need to introduce some legislation, which I'm working on in a bipartisan manner to help, you know, control, you know, some of these rogue police officers and make sure that this is not going to happen again, but also increase training. That's what we should be focusing on, training techniques for community policing and, you know, monitoring a little bit. So I think the conversation, hopefully people have had enough of this and they're going to stand up and things are going to happen. But, you know, like anything, we want to make sure.